Hello, this is Lonnie Stark of Stark Silver Creek, and welcome to another edition of Wine Tales, where we profile the people, places, and vines of wine country. Today is February 5th, 2009. I'm joined today by Peter Heitz, the winemaker at Turnbull Wine Cellars in Napa. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Thank you for joining us. Just for our listeners, it'd be great if you can tell us a little about yourself, how you actually got started in the wine industry, and you know, when was that moment where you thought this was the field that I really wanted to be in?
Well, I suppose I have somewhat of a unique history. I'm a fourth generation grape grower or vintner in the Napa Valley, so grew up making home wine and working in my grandfather's vineyard and in my dad's vineyard. Made home wine from, you know, a little kid in a wading pool and diapers up in, you know, through high school. I think it's not a common experience maybe, but it's a way to indoctrinate your kids with an interest in winemaking, I suspect. And it didn't fall far from the tree sort of thing. When I was in high school, my folks suggested that I should go to UC Davis and get a degree in viticulture and enology, and I've already learned this with my little kids that if I want them to do something, I don't lead them quite so directly to the water. And so since they wanted me to do that, I figured it was a bad idea, and so I didn't go. I instead enrolled in UC Santa Cruz. I have a degree in biology. And then when I was down in Santa Cruz, I mostly rode bikes and raced bicycles and this sort of thing, and when I got out of school, I had really no idea what I wanted to do after that, and my folks suggested that I move home to Calistoga and work a crush and see if I liked that better than working, you know, with bikes. So I gave it a shot and got a harvest job and kind of worked my way up. It's a really fascinating field. It combines science, plant, you know, it really making good wine is all about growing good grapes. So it's more of a farming job than anything, I suppose. But it kind of involves my love of plants and growing good fruit. And then there's the kind of more analytical aspect of making great wine from that. So kind of combines my history with my interests, and there you have it.
So as much as you had tried to veer off into something else, it sort of brought you back to your roots still.
Yeah, you know, when you grow up in the Napa Valley, you maybe don't appreciate what a beautiful, wonderful spot it is and how fortunate we are. And when you go away and then come back with more mature eyes, you realize what a special opportunity to find really great interesting work and live in such a beautiful place.
So you mentioned biology at first. Was it just so that you didn't have to go to UC Davis and study viticulture, or were you at the time planning to be something else?
Well, you know, at the time I liked bike riding and competitively, and I thought that Davis was too flat, actually, and not hilly enough, and not enough good riding. I had you know, long hair, and I thought that the atmosphere in Santa Cruz seemed more attractive. You know, when you're a youngster, you don't necessarily have the longest viewpoint about what the future might hold for you. It actually serves a kind of an interesting counterpoint. I mean, most of my counterparts making wine in the Napa Valley have viticulture and enology degrees from Fresno or Davis or Cornell, or you know, have official schooling in it. And my background comes more from doing a lot of vineyard work. And I find in my winemaking that the key to making great wine is actually starting with really good ingredients. You can imagine if, let's say, someone was a chef, and you could have a great kitchen that had all the fanciest equipment and a wonderful spice rack and great pans and a nice stove, but if you only had canned green beans to work with, it doesn't matter how talented you are or how much you know about, you know, the different temperatures at which chocolate melts or the right process to brown a, you know, an ingredient. If your ingredients aren't so good to begin with, what you turn out with, you know, tastes like canned green beans. And so the key to really making good wine is starting with good ingredients. And that, you know, 90% of my job is actually in the vineyard, growing grapes that can be turned into good wine. So I think from my kind of boots on in the dirt experience, you know, that's where my strength lies, is in the field.
That's interesting you compare it, or you actually associate very much with farming. In fact, in our conversation with Massimo at Eller's, he was saying the same thing, that a lot of it is that manual work and that farming aspect of it and that labor. Question about sort of you mentioned the boots and the dirt and going out there. There's a lot of different notions about what winemaking is like. What do you think is the most interesting sort of romanticized notion that people had or have when you talk to someone not in the wine industry? And also, what sort of the interesting pleasures you find in it that you didn't think you'd like, and then as you're doing it, you realize how much you love it?
Yeah, it's you know, it's interesting. It's I can't think of a better job. Making wine is fantastic. You know, it's also interesting to all kinds of people. It's amazing that people find it as interesting as they do. It wouldn't be so much fun to say that you were the chief toothpaste mixer or something at the toothpaste factory. You know, I guess. You know, I think people romanticize it because it is so nice. I don't know if there's a part of that romance that's not true. You know, it's a lot of fun. I mean, you get to work in a really beautiful place. I spend a lot of time walking up and down vineyard rows, looking at how vines are growing. It can be solitary and beautiful. You see some amazing wildlife and just some really great spots. I suppose towards the end of harvest, which can be, you know, a long kind of slog, I do miss my little kids and my wife a little bit, and you get tired of part of assessing when the grapes are ready to pick, which is a critical part of making good wine, is walking up and down the rows and eating a lot of grapes. So towards the harvest, I guess my least favorite part is throwing another grape in my mouth. By the harvest, you know, you've tasted hundreds of thousands of grapes, and I never want to see another grape in my life towards the end of harvest. So, you know, that I guess that's, you know, probably people don't recognize that even something that's kind of wonderful can get a little tiresome at times.
Actually, you bring up a good point, and it's this similar pattern about tasting not only the grapes but also the wine as it's still fresh in the barrel, and for listeners to be reminded that this isn't tasting the ready-made, you know, wines that are ready for drinking, but more the very astringent sort of things that are still in process in the barrels that have to be tasted sometimes in the morning.
Yeah, it's actually interesting when I tell people how many barrels I taste through every day, they're shocked, and I think it sounds like a great time. You know, Turnbull makes about 25,000 cases of wine each year. It's all from our estate ranches, and that translates into about 1,100 red barrels that we store from each vintage for, you know, 18 to 24 months or so. And I try to taste through all those barrels every month. And so since we'll have two vintages at the same time, right now in our cellar we have our 2007s are in their second year of maturation, and our 2008s are just filled and just getting started. So I have two sets of, you know, 1,100, 1,200 barrels per vintage. So, you know, I think I've got just over 2,300 barrels out there right now, and I try to taste each and every one of them every month.
Wow.
And it's, you know, it is a little bit like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. You start at the beginning and you taste through them, and I keep notes on them, and I don't know what winemakers did before computers, because, you know, you can keep all this data and sort it and look at it different ways, and that really helps you know, get a grip on what the wine's doing and where it might ultimately be blended and how it fits together as a whole. But you know, tasting through those barrels, I've got to taste, you know, slightly over 100 barrels a day. And so I do start pretty early and taste a lot of barrels, you know, and it's, I guess, you know, you mentioned the tannin aspect of it, and I guess when you do a lot of tasting, you get fairly used to tannins. I'm not particularly tan and sensitive. So that's a good thing in my line of work, but I guess it could be a hindrance if you don't appreciate what the Turnbull aficionados like. If they're not liking as much tannin as doesn't seem tannic to me, then we have a disconnect. So it's great fun. I like tasting all the wine. They're like your kids, and they change over time, and you get to kind of see them grow up and go through rough phases and beautiful phases, and you have to appreciate all the different phases that the wines put on during the course of their aging.
So you did mention you have kids. Are you projecting that they will also become winemakers?
Well, I would like to. I guess I'd like that they would live closer to their husband, for folks had in mind too when they were encouraging me to go into the family trade. I guess I would hope so. Outside of Turnbull, I have my own small family winery.
Oh.
And my kids help me with that. So, I mean, it's very, very small. But we make a little bit of wine, and they have their names on little wine bottles out there. They have a couple different vineyard blocks in our old family ranch that are named after them. And so they're very excited when we make that wine in our garage. They absolutely help and love it. So it's pretty rewarding. And my 7-year-old daughter can, swirl a wine glass and tell you what it tastes like. It's fun to see them experience how fun something can be.
It'll be interesting if they do become winemakers and someone asks them, how long have you been doing it for? And they can say, as long as I'm, since I was born, sort of thing. So,
yeah, I mean, I guess I don't want to push them too hard, but I wouldn't be displeased if they did it. I think it's really a really unique experience, and I think it's a lot of fun. I mean, I can't imagine doing something else. But, I mean, my daughter now thinks that she wants to be a vet, and she loves horses and all this kind of stuff. And, the chances that she'll want to make wine are probably lower the more I get excited about it. But or my son, who's 4, he doesn't like wine right now. He thinks it's yucky. So I don't know. He'll probably change his mind at some point.
Well, he'll go through his motorcycle phase, his Santa Cruz phase, and then come home and realize what a beautiful vineyard his father actually had and how fortunate he is. So with Turnbull, you mentioned quite a number of ranches and vineyards. So you really take the wine from the grape to the bottle. Can you sort of talk a little about the properties of Turnbull and just a little of the history of how you sort of accumulated so many different vineyards across such an expansive area?
Yeah, Turnbull has these 5 acres of vines, and they're really 5 distinct ranches. We have the Turnbull Home Ranch, which is right around the winery in Oakville, and nestled just to the north of Nicola, and just south of Cape Bread. And it's about 15 acres of vines. And the red grapes that we grow here, the Merlot and the Cabernet and the Petit Syrah, really have just really nice bright fruit, clean, crisp red fruit. And we grow some Sauvignon Blanc, and that fruit is just loaded with kind of honeydew melon and citrus. It's light and crisp and clean. And so this ranch makes wines that are really pretty, but don't have a lot of tannic backbone or structure or fleshiness to them. But they're bright wines. And then we have a ranch that we call Skellinger Ranch, which was, interestingly enough, it's over in Skellinger Land near Camas. And this was the Christian Brothers' first Cabernet Sauvignon ranch that they used for their Mount LaSalle wine. So it's kind of a historically famous ranch in the Napa Valley. Now about half of the ranch is planted to Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier, and the other half is Merlot and Cabernet. And the fruit there is somewhat similar to the Turnbull Home Ranch in that it's very bright red fruit for the reds, and the white grapes present, nice, a little bit more of a tropical note there, but not terribly fleshy or structured. Nice level of tan and a little hint of kind of black tea in the reds that makes them a little slightly more interesting than the Home Ranch grapes. And then kind of moving up the ladder in terms of intrigue and concentration, we have our Fortuna Ranch, which sits over on the Silverado Trail just north of Rudd and kind of across the street from Miner family. A beautiful ranch. It's red volcanic soil. It's a kind of an alluvial fan that's coming off the Oakville bench. It's perfectly sloped, and the row orientation's all set up just right to the southern exposure, so the grapes can really hang for a long time there. And that ranch gives the fruit just a really racy, spicy, fleshy characteristic. We've got Cabernet, Cabernet Franc, Merlot, and Petit Syrah and Syrah at that ranch, and they're all just really stellar examples of the variety. Great concentration and spiciness, getting into more of the black fruit flavors there. And then we have a ranch up in Calistoga that we call Aminas, which is in Latin poetry is somewhat similar to the Garden of Eden. And it was named this because it's really the most stunningly beautiful of our ranches. It was the last ranch that Turnbull developed. It was developed in the late 90s, and it's really coming into its own now. But when it was planted, you know, environmental awareness was rising, and the ranch is planted with native plant corridors, and you know, it's a wild and scenic place. There's large ponderosa trees and you know, acres and acres of you know, 100-year-old oak trees that are just magnificent, speckled throughout the ranch. It's really a gorgeous spot, and we grow Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, and Zinfandel, Petit Verdot, Petit Syrah at that ranch. And really, that ranch presents fruit that just has tremendous depth, mid-palate, rich, ripe, fleshy fruit, just really huge, fleshy wines that really fill out the center of the wine, and just delicious, yummy stuff. And then our fifth ranch is up on the Oakville Bench, ranges in elevation from about 800 feet to about 1,200 feet in elevation, and it sits up next to Dolleval and Vine Cliff between those, and so it sits up on this volcanic rock-strewn hillside, very lean soil, and the fruit from there sets, you know, the fruit set is so minimal that the grapes are just ultra-concentrated, and they make the wines from this ranch have tremendous structure and length. Unlike the Aminas Ranch, which has big, fat, fleshy flavors, this Leopoldina Ranch, which is up on the mountain, has just tremendous structure. And so when we take these five ranches for Leopoldina, Aminas, and Fortuna Ranches, we make some vineyard-designated wines from those ranches that we're quite proud of. And then we also make a Bordeaux blend from the three ranches that's our kind of our reserve Napa Valley Cabernet, to be affectionately called a black label. And this shows kind of, it takes the structure from Leopoldina and the fleshy fat from Aminas and the spiciness from Fortuna and fuses them together. It's really a really great wine. You know, so each of these different pieces plays together to kind of create a mosaic story of the wines. You can imagine if you had a symphony and it was all world-class trombones, but you only had trombones, it would be beautiful and wonderful trombones, but it would be a little monolithic. And if you blend multiple ranches together, or multiple varieties in a Bordeaux blend, or even using different cooperages, you know, or fermenting the fruit differently, you can create different instruments for your blends so that the overall symphony is, you know, is more beautiful than just having a single instrument. It has many different layers and complexity. So it's, you know, really how I was attracted to come make wine for Turnbull, was they drove around and looked at the ranches and decided, wow, these guys really know how to farm right. And it's true. We have a full-time staff of seven vineyard professionals that have all been with Turnbull for over 10 years. And, you know, just really great stewards of the land and really know how to grow great grapes. So makes my job pretty easy because I'm working with fruit that's stellar.
Of all the wine vineyards that you have, which one would you say is your favorite?
I'd have to say it's our Aminas Ranch up in Calistoga. Having kind of grown up around the area of Calistoga, I have a fondness for that. I live a few miles from the Aminas Ranch, so it's you know, it's near and dear to my heart. It's our most beautiful ranch. It's kind of a wild and scenic place, and this rolling hills, just beautiful soils and super well tended. We have just a really great vineyard crew, and they know how to take care of the place nicely.
So is it, would you consider that place to also make the best wines as well?
Yeah, of course. It makes this fruit that has just a really deep blackberry, black cherry characteristic. It's very, I think that's a characteristic that the soon-to-be-named Calistoga-Avier will be known for, dense fruit flavors. And that's a really great tool to have as a winemaker, is a ranch that creates fruit that has a lot of density and just beautiful suppleness to it. So it's it really helps build the mid palate of our Napa Valley Cabernet or our Black Label. You can really see it in our. We make a single vineyard Cabernet from the Minas Ranch, and that wine just shows that flush, deep, dark fruit, and it's pretty enticing.
Yeah, just your description of Arminius and your attribution of it being the Latin word for something like the Garden of Eden, just your description earlier on about that vineyard was just beautiful, and just all the words you used painted a wonderful picture that I just wanted to go visit it right away. So I can imagine that if you like going out and walking around as part of what you do, that would be a great place to spend a day.
Yeah, it really is. Actually, last summer we had a barbecue up at the ranch for our wine club members, and I took whoever was willing. It's a pretty hilly ranch that rolls and turns, and I took a group of folks, and we hiked through the whole vineyard, and I staged samples of wine that came from different vineyard blocks around the ranch. And as we got there, we talked about the viticulture and tasted the wines, and I think it was pretty well received. I think everybody has learned a lot about viticulture and winemaking, and got some exceptional exercise. It was it's quite a feat to walk around the ranch with a glass of wine in your hand.
You mentioned earlier that you really thought about becoming a winemaker at Turnbull after they took you around and you saw all the different vineyards, and you thought that they really got their farming down. What do you see as your vision for the wines coming out of Turnbull, and how long have you been at Turnbull?
Yeah, I started at Turnbull right before the 2007 harvest, so the 2007 vintage wines are mine, I'm pretty excited about it. The Sauvignon Blanc and the Viognier have been released and consumed and are gone, and now the 2008s are out there. We'll be bottling the 2007 reds this late summer, so those are still resting in the barrel, but they're pretty exciting. My vision for the winemaking, it really comes right from the field. The key to making wines that are interesting to drink is making wines that reflect both the soils and places that the wines grow in and the season. So, if you lay a heavy hand of winemaking, whether it's a lot of new oak or extended maceration or, malolactic in your whites or some process that overshadows the fruit, then I think for me the wines are less intriguing. They're less... they tell us about where the fruit came from in the first place. So as a winemaker, I take a pretty light hand.
Currently, right now at Turnbull, what are you busy with right now in this season?
So right now, we're actually taking our 2008 reds, which have been in barrel for about 2 to 3 months, and we're racking them out of the barrel into a tank, and then putting them back in the barrels. And this helps build a little oxygen into the wines. It helps soften some of the tannins. And also gives us opportunity to, since we do go through malolactic fermentation on our reds in barrel, the wines are barreled down with a little bit of lees to help the malolactic be successful. And then we're racking out the barrel and back, we're washing the barrels and discarding that little bit of lees. So, that's the season that we're in. That's falling behind. About 2 weeks ago, we actually bottled our 2008 Sauvignon Blanc and Viognier, and they turned out wonderful. So right after the new year, we got to work blending those wines, and now we're doing racking on our 2008 reds. Then we'll go back and top our 2007 reds that are in barrel, and then we'll start disgorging some of the early blends and bottling those. So we've got a pretty year-round schedule, and you know, it's a lot of fun. There's definitely different seasons. So it's one of the rewarding things of making wine is that every day is different, and through the seasons you do different tasks.
You mentioned that you do a lot of barrel tasting. So of all the sort of barrels you've tasted, what do you think is going to be a real star this year of the releases coming out of Turnbull?
The releases that we have coming out this year, we're just releasing our 2008 Sauvignon Blanc, which is really spectacular. I'm super proud of it. It's beautiful wine. And from barrel, the what we have in barrel right now that I'm tasting in barrel, those wines won't actually be bottled until the end of the summer, and then they won't release until 2010. So, but really, the single vineyard wines that we have from the Minas and the Opadina up on the bench and the Fortuna Ranch, those there's just some really spectacular barrels there that I'm very excited about. The culmination of all our ranches just makes a fantastic Napa Valley Cabernet. That's the cornerstone of what we do. And, you know, it just has amazing density and fleshiness to it, and just a really nice spicy note that the Fortuna Ranch brings in. So, very pleased with how that's coming along. The releases that are coming up this summer we'll have our 2006 Napa Valley Cabernet coming out that we bottled last summer. We bottle aged things for quite a bit of time before we release them, which helps them be ready to go when we do release them. That's a delicious wine. And we have, again, the single vineyard cabs from our different ranches will be coming up. And those are pretty special.
So when you're not busy walking around the vineyards and tasting barrels, what do you like to do for fun? Do you still get on a motorcycle occasionally and go down and, you know, bike along the vineyards?
Yeah, actually my previous pastime was bicycle racing, not with bicycles. And, you know, and since I've had kids and living the life of a winemaker, you pack on a couple pounds, so I'm not exactly in racing shape anymore. But I do like to get out on my bike and go for a ride. Napa Valley is a beautiful place for a bike ride. Mostly, I'm, you know, we're busy with our family, and you know, we have our own little winery. When I'm not making wine for Turnbull, I'm working on that quite a bit.
So when you mention your own little winery, I mean, you obviously love winemaking because you do it for Turnbull, and then you go home and make your own wine. Do you actually sell that wine as well, or do you, you know, is it just for friends and family?
No, it's a commercial winery as well, but it's tiny. And, you know, I think that's part of my family legacy. We still farm the same ranch that my great-grandparents cleared in 1896 up in Calistoga. And so that little winery that we work at home is the result of the fruit from this farm that we've been farming for 100 years. So, you know, it's part of kind of our family tradition.
Quite the legacy. So, Peter, I want to thank you for taking the time to spend with us. I really enjoyed, and I'm sure our listeners will also enjoy this episode of Wine Tales.
Well, thanks for having me. It's nice to tell people about what we're doing in Turnbull.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Wine Tales, where we profile the stories, people, places, and vines of wine country. For other Wine Tales episodes, please visit starksilvercreek.com or search for Wine Tales on iTunes. This is Lonnie Stark of Stark Silver Creek. Thank you for joining us.